Just a transfer, isn't it? A work session on House Bill 2700 for the purpose of transferring it to the Committee on Rules and Elections.
So moved.
Senator Shannon's moved House Bill 2700 to the Senate Committee on Rules and Elections. Is there a further discussion? Objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Or excuse me, will the clerk call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries.
Oh, this is
I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 529. For the purpose of referring it to the Senate Committee on Public Affairs.
I move Senate Bill 529. Yes. Sorry, I'm going to do that.
No.
Okay, to the Committee on Public Affairs. Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Before we take action on this, this is one of those bills that so many people across our state feel very strongly about and supportive of. There have been polls taken. There is enormous support for this legislation. We have people here who are standing in support of this legislation. I'm wondering if, since we have it before us, we could at least give some people an opportunity to say a few words about this bill before we send it on to the next committee. I feel it should be kept here. I feel it's something we should do a work session on and hear all of the arguments. I know there are people who have concerns about this legislation as well as being supportive. It would just be great to hear all of those issues aired. Since this is such an important issue for people all across our state, and I'm just wondering if we could allow some of these people to say something.
Senator Fisher, I'd like to speak, too, about my motion.
Go ahead.
Well, and that is that we're under a deadline, and since people are working on this bill, and that's where the bill's really going to be worked, because the leadership wants it to go there, I agree with Senator Castillo, only if it doesn't inhibit us to do the work that we have on other bills to do this week, because this week or the last, next is the last to hear House bills and to work them.
Oh, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'm going to accept Senator Shannon's motion so we can discuss this.
Oh, excuse me.
Bill. Yeah. So Senator Shannon has moved House Senate Bill 529 to the Senate Committee on Public Affairs. Now we can have discussion. Go ahead, John.
Sorry.
Well, Mr. Chair, as you know, this is one of my major bills for this year. And I guess I'm trying to figure out, Senator Hannon's working on it, and I wish I knew, if I thought we were sending something to die, I don't want to die any place. I'm afraid of that. I think, from what I've gathered from Senator Hannon really wants to pass, so he's going to be working hard on it. Senator Durfler is supportive of doing something this session. He's guaranteeing we'll do something. I don't know. I wish I had some of it.
Well, I can only assure you this, that if it doesn't go there, I'm going to gavel it and it's dead here.
Yeah,
so,
I understand that.
I guess you can keep it alive if you want, or keep an opportunity to keep working on it. We do have the task force coming up. We have assurance of that, and we will be working on this in the interim. I am respectful of the desire to work something out now, and I've always been respectful of that. This is not something that I've held up because of the fact that it isn't a serious problem. It's the extent of the problem and the very fact that the cost that it does to insurance policies for private insurance carriers and is not a fix-all for the mental health issues in the entire state by any manner of means, because it only affects the ones on private insurance and does not affect anyone else. So this has been a troubling situation because I know as a small employer what insurance costs, or rising insurance costs, do to your ability to furnish it to the your employees. So that's no undue respect to the folks who have come here this morning, regardless of the fact that I have very plainly published no public hearing on this, which I am not going to take the time this morning to do. So I'm willing to call a vote on this and send it to the committee and keep it alive and have them continue to work on it in that committee. And otherwise than that, I guess that's not an easy choice.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
My vote to do that will be merely that I think it's the best opportunity to keep it alive.
I appreciate that.
And I understand that. Otherwise, you can.
And that would be my reason for extending it on to the next committee, is to keep it alive. And I would encourage anybody who's here to talk to the chair of the committee we're sending it to and encourage that person to give this a fair hearing.
Further discussion? Objections? Will the clerk call the roll?
Attorney Duncan?
Aye.
Attorney
Cameron? Aye.
Attorney
Castillo?
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Close the work session on Senate Bill 529 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 2144A. Garnish space. House Bill 2144. We've got amendments coming on a couple of these other bills.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Barney Spate, Administrator of the Office for Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research. I believe I gave staff copies of a memo that I directed to you that gives an overview of House Bill 2144A. Very quickly, this bill was introduced at the request of our office as a result of work completed during the 1997-99 interim as authorized by Senate Bill 1182. Under that legislation, our office was directed to convene a work group of interested parties for the express purpose of adopting a standardized form for provider credentialing and for simplifying the administrative aspects of the credentialing process. House Bill 2144A represents a consensus on how to streamline and make uniform the process of credentialing physicians for membership on hospital medical staff and participation in licensed health plans that require such credentialing. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are basically four major parts to 2144A. First, it creates an advisory committee on physician credentialing information within the Office for Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research. That advisory committee is comprised of 9 members, 3 each from the interested parties of physicians, hospitals, and health plans. The members of the committee are appointed by the OHPPR administrator and serve for terms of 3 years. They also would serve without compensation or reimbursement of expenses. Secondly, the bill establishes the mission of the advisory committee. It is directed to develop and submit recommendations to the office relating to the collection of uniform information necessary for hospitals and health plans to credential physicians. The advisory committee's recommendations shall specify the content and format of a credentialing application form and the content and format of a recredentialing application form. The advisory committee is directed to meet at least annually to make certain that its recommendations reflect current credentialing standards developed by national accreditation organizations and applicable federal regulations. And the Office for Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research is directed to support the work of the advisory committee. Third, Mr. Chair, the bill establishes a process for transforming the advisory committee's recommendations into administrative rules to be promulgated by the applicable regulatory agencies. The Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research Office is to forward the advisory committee's recommendations to the Department of Consumer and Business Services, that agency regulates health plans, and to the health division, which licenses and regulates hospitals, with a request that each agency develop rules to implement and enforce the advisory committee recommendations. Furthermore, each agency directed to consult with each other and with my office to ensure that the respective rules of each agency are identical and consistent with the advisory committee's recommendations. And then the administrative rules shall be adopted in a timely manner under the APA. And lastly, Mr. Chair, I think this is important. It stipulates that the credentialing information required pursuant to this proposed legislation will constitute a minimum information standard. No hospital or health plan would be prevented from requesting additional credentialing information from a licensed physician for the purpose of completing its internal credentialing process. Lastly, I'd note that there's no fiscal impact associated with this bill. Our office can undertake the administrative support functions for the legislation within existing budget. And 2144A, as it comes to this committee, represents a consensus of all of the interested parties, best of my knowledge, that have been involved in this process for over a year and a half. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Christina.
Thank you. Barney, maybe you mentioned this at the beginning of your testimony and I missed it. What is the problem we're trying to solve with this? Or is this, I guess I'm not clear on why this is needed.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, there are 64 community hospitals approximately in the state and dozens of health plans, many of which require physicians to at least initially become credentialed with the health plan and then on a routine basis, for example, every 2 years to become recredentialed. There was concern expressed during the last session and the interim work group worked on this issue of trying to standardize the information set so that a physician who might practice in two or three hospitals in the community and want to participate in two or three health plans wouldn't have to go through, in that example I just gave you, five or six different application processes. So this work group actually reflects some voluntary work that was done on the part of the hospital health plan and medical community to develop a voluntary standard, and there was a feeling that they would like to put this in statute so that it becomes a way to streamline this information transfer.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, I'll close here. Stick around a moment. I think I'd like to have you introduce an amendment or two here that you have coming up so that the committee has a little idea of what's coming next.
Is the amendment on this one, or do you wait for work session?
I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on the House Bill 2144A.
Okay, I move House Bill 2144A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Duncan moves House Bill 2144A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Objection? Hearing none, will the clerk call it off?
Senator Simmons?
Aye.
Senator Steele?
Aye.
Senator Duncan?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Did you say you'd carry? Okay. Senator Duncan will carry House Bill 2144, which is passed, and I'll pass the work session. House Bill 2144A, and open a work session on House Bill 2146. A public hearing on House Bill 2146. Excuse me. Go ahead and describe the amendments that you would propose for this one.
Okay, Mr. Chair, again for the record, Barney State, Office for Oregon Healthcare and Policy and Research. 2146, as it is before the committee today, is, as I indicated on the House side, perhaps the most housekeeping-oriented bill I've been involved in my career. It's always dangerous to say that. But it basically tries to bring into consistency the statutory mission statement for the Oregon Health Council to actually portray what it does. It deletes one archaic reference to the creation of adopting a state health plan, which the Oregon Health Council and our office has not been involved in for many, many years since the end of federal health planning. And it replaces the authorization to prepare and submit to the governor, and it was added on the House side and the Legislative Assembly, resolutions relating to health care reform. That's the bill as it sits before you today. As the chair did indicate, our office has requested some amendments to this bill, which would bring more current the healthcare data collection responsibilities of our office, which we do under statute, but also in coordination with the work of the Oregon Health Council. Briefly, to highlight those amendments, one, we collect hospital inpatient discharge data and have for a number of years to monitor, and it's useful both in a number of areas in the healthcare world of changes that are going on in hospital admission practices. We are seeking to broaden that to include ambulatory surgery data, since so much of hospital services now are being done on an outpatient basis. So there is, if you will, an expansion of gathering the clinical data that we've been collecting on an annual basis in cooperation with the Hospital Association for a decade or more. The other major part of the bill, Mr. Chair, is the repeal of several sections, which I believe, and I believe the hospital industry concurs, are somewhat archaic. We collect a great deal of what is known as hospital pricing information, and that is arose out of an era when hospital cost containment basically focused on what I would call kind of pre-regulatory information gathering, and that information is really not all that useful in today's world. And so we're suggesting, and we've consulted with the hospital industry about actually stopping the collection of some data that we don't believe is any more relevant. And so the other major part of these amendments that you will see actually repeal some of the some of those statutes that are we believe are out of date.
Okay. We'll look forward to decreasing paperwork, I can tell you that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
Bonnie, if this goes over on the House side, were there any concerns raised about adding the that this has to now be presented to the Legislative Assembly at these recommendations?
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, the chair of the House Human Resources Committee asked me what I thought about that, and I was very supportive of it, because the work of the Health Council, our office supports the work of the Health Council. We routinely try to make the legislative leadership and legislature aware of all of our work, so this really strengthens, I think, the linkage, particularly the potential policy investigation linkage that the Health Council could do on behalf of the legislature. So our office is supportive of it, and I checked with the chair of the Health Council, and they are supportive of that change also.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do you have any concerns about the decisions of the Health Council becoming politicized if the legislature gets involved, more involved in the decisions that are being made by the Health Council?
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, no, I don't, and I want to distinguish something just so that I'm not misunderstanding. The Oregon Health Council is not the Oregon Health Services Commission. The Health Council does look at very broad policy and health policy initiatives, and to some degree, those broad issues ultimately probably become political. But I think that the council's role in the past has been a useful preliminary forum in which differences of perspective or concurrence and consensus about issues can be worked out and then moved forward into the legislative process. For example, their most recent work in the last couple of years had to do with uninsured children and how to make the children's health insurance program connect with what Oregon already had in place. So, in that sense, it brought together a number of interested parties and helped build consensus that perhaps, I'd like to think, makes your work easier, or at least crystallizes the differences of opinion when there are differences of opinion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to this next
year. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2146A. Senator Shannon, would you mind just giving me a little preview of your amendment to 2048?
Yes, I'm happy.
All right.
Do you want me to go down?
Senator Shannon has requested an amendment to House Bill 2108, and so I'm going to let her just give us a little brief rundown on what that is. So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2108A.
Okay. A year or so ago, the dental board was working with this problem of that dentist, I think, that was flying out from California and practicing dentistry out of a home. And so they passed a rule that said that you could only practice dentistry if you had a practice. And what it did was my friend has Salem. It's very nice. It sounds kind of funny, but it's very nice. It's like a beauty shop. She does trimming cosmetics, and which she practices eyebrows, eyeliner, and lips. And a retired dentist would come in and deaden lips before tattooing the lips. But this new rule forbid that, so the people would either have to do it painfully or go to a dentist's office and drive them to the permanent cosmetic place. And I had an amendment drafted that just said there's a list of exceptions, and it would just say that a licensed retired dentist could still do that. And it's kind of like I'm a substitute teacher, and it says that if you've been a teacher in your life, you can qualify to be a sub. And it's kind of that same principle that if you've been trained and a licensed dentist, then they just carved out that loophole, and they're writing up the amendment, and it'll be ready on Monday, Wednesday.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes.
This time's going to be, I'm concerned about a little. Am I getting the feeling that the Board of Dentistry is opposed?
Not to my knowledge. They helped me write it.
They did.
Mm-hmm. Not to my knowledge.
Association?
I haven't heard. If they're opposed, I'll talk to them.
The dentist.
To my knowledge, there's no opposition.
Can we get a response to them? Because the only reason I asked that is because it's.
By Wednesday, you'll for sure have a response.
Yeah.
Because I'm not doing something that's against,
Yeah.
We have some folks here, I think, that want to testify, and I don't know.
Okay.
Jane, did you wish to? I don't want to put you on the spot here. That's the reason I asked Senator Shannon to outline a little bit of what the amendment was, is I wanted people to have a chance to think about it, because we are down kind of the wire here, and
And it's not to kill the bill or anything like
no,
that. That's not my intention at all.
That's what I said. I see the
mm-hmm.
being from the dental school for sure.
Mr. Chair and mm-hmm. members of the committee, Jane Myers from the Oregon Dental Association. And just to answer your question, the construction of the amendment, I do not represent the Board of Dentistry. I represent the Oregon Dental Association, to make that clear and on the record. I don't think the board's been heard on the amendment.
I don't know that they've seen it. That's why I would like to have. I went into legislative council and the person wasn't there, but I have it all ready to be drafted. And if there's great opposition, I mean, it's not my intent to shove anything down anybody, but it just seems like the right place and time to do it.
Well,
I do not want to delay the bill. To make it not happen,
Senator Duncan. Yeah, we've got a Tuesday meeting tomorrow, and if things don't go the way we need Wednesday, I may call a meeting Friday evening, because I have actually a dispensation through Friday. Senator Shields.
Is this in any way put OHSU's goals in jeopardy?
Yeah, I don't know why it would.
Aren't they the ones that need this bill?
Well, I don't intend to jeopardize the bill.
Nobody does.
Yeah, that's not the point. We want the bill to pass.
I don't want to hurt anybody.
We have some other folks here. This is a public hearing time, so you didn't get a chance to sign up. You came in late, so just come on up and introduce yourselves here for the record, and I'll let you speak in any order that you wish.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Chris Hudson. I'm president of the Oregon Board of Dentistry.
with me full-time, Stephanie is a member of the staff. We saw a copy of the draft that Senator Shannon put out on Friday, and we really don't support it. If people insist that something be drafted, we would prefer that it be a dentist, because a retired dentist is incapable of getting anesthesia, because you have to have a license in order to get any drugs whatsoever. A retired dentist, we have no control over. We could not discipline a retired dentist. We can discipline a licensed dentist if anything should go awry. I'm very concerned about protection of the public in this matter. If the dentist gives a person a shot, and then they go to the tattoo artist and have something, have the tattoo, something can happen. An infection can happen, or some a reaction to the shot. How do you tell which person caused it, and who do you discipline for that? Dentistry is not an exact science, I have found out, as sitting on the board for 5 years as a public member. And things happen when people have shots of Novocaine. We've had some very bad experiences, and people have had very bad experiences that they've come to the board with. And you wouldn't know.
Yes. I'd like to respond to that. That's the whole situation, because the only way you could do it now is go to a dentist and then drive to the tattoo place, and then you'd have the reaction. Of
Right now, it is illegal for a dentist to give do a procedure on anyone who is not a, what's the term? A patient of record. And so if the person comes into the office to have something done to the tooth or teeth, then the dentist can give a shot of Novocaine. But if the person isn't doing that, then the dentist is operating illegally. And
well,
we could discipline
that's
that.
What they do.
Well.
And that's the loophole in the law. And rather than have someone who is going to go and get a new license and go through all that, when the dentist has been trained, there needs to be worked out, and I'm happy to work it with you, so that someone doesn't have to go to school to do all this, and then we don't have to have government re-license. It's that it works well with somebody who's already had all training to do it. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, I mean, it seems like only a bureaucracy would want to have a whole new license for someone like this when they already know how to do it. And that's why it's carved out very carefully in the exceptions. If you saw where it was, and it was, if we could work after this, and with an idea that we're going to make something work, and just instead of saying, no, that a dentist has to leave, well, you said, how can it happen?
Yes.
You're just saying it can't.
Senator Shannon, the point that was raised was, how is a retired dentist getting access to this drug when they don't have
what they are.
And, well, that may be.
Yeah, and lots of times we make things legal because they're happy and they're safe.
But they have to be a licensed dentist in order to have the DEA number, don't they?
Yes, Senator Fisher, you do not need to have a DEA number to get Novocaine. However, you have to have a license in order to get it, because you're prescribing. It's a prescription drug.
And that is a license, i.e. active?
Yes, you have to present your, you can order it from a supply house, but you have to present your license to the supply house in order to get the drug. So a retired dentist could have in his office or her office a supply of old Novocaine and use that, but if there's been a recall or something, they wouldn't receive a notice because they're not licensed, and then when they run out, then where do they get it?
Senator?
Yes.
In ORS 679025, it lists license to practice dentistry exemptions, and they are listed A through L. And this would just be an M. There's all A, B, C, D, E,
what are some of these?
H, I, J, K, L. There are 17, 12. Well, dentists practicing in the discharge of official duties employees of the United States, instructors of dentistry, dentists employed by public health, persons licensed to practice medicine in the state in the regular discharge of their duties, bona fide full-time students of dentistry during the period of the student's enrollment, dentist licensed in other states, persons practicing dentistry upon themselves, dental hygienists, dental assistants, a person's license as a denturist under ORS, a limited access permit dental hygienist dentist who renders services authorized by a limited access permit issued by the board pursuant. It just would be one more exemption.
Well, denturist is not.
Well, that's what L is.
Denturist would have not licensed to give any kind of medical.
Well, if they're permitted issued by the board pursuant to ORS 680.200.
Sure,
of this one, of that law?
Yes.
Okay, it shall be unlawful for any person not otherwise authorized by law to practice dentistry or purport to be a dentist without a valid license to practice dentistry issued by the Oregon Board of Dentistry. The requirements of this section shall not apply to, and then it goes through A through L, all the exceptions. And I do not want to, you know, make anything unsafe or anything like that, but there is a thing that is developing that needs to be somehow under the law.
Yes, go ahead.
Senator Fisher, Senator Shannon, I'm Paul Kleinstub. I'm the chief investigator for the Board of Dentistry. I'd like to address two issues with Senator Shannon, if I could. The first one is, the Board of Dentistry has determined that dentists, when practicing dentistry, can use local anesthetic if they're practicing dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
Utilization of lip tattooing isn't the practice of dentistry, so it would not appear to be appropriate to include an exemption in this particular statute for the practice of dentistry if lip tattooing isn't the practice of dentistry.
That's why the amendment says, Senator Chair, M would be a dentist who is in compliance with ORS, you know, gone to medical school, dental, all that, and administers local anesthesia for the purpose of tattooing lips by permanent color technician and tattoo artist licensed under, and then it lists, you know, the license has been licensed. It just carves out a little niche. So
Senator, couldn't you have them be required to have an active license?
We could do whatever works.
I could see doing something if they were licensed and the board, because if they're not licensed, the board doesn't have a right to pass judgment on them, from my understanding.
And do they give up their license totally at retirement?
They can reactivate their license.
Mm-hmm.
They have a window of opportunity for a couple of years, assuming that they've done all the continuing education and so on and so forth, yes.
I would just like to work with these people to find a way to make it work instead of just say, no, we're not going to, because I don't think it's safe having people drive with their mouth, you know, pulling over.
And if I could address that issue also, most of us who have gone to dentists and had our teeth or our mouth numb so dentists can work on our teeth, you're clearly numb for a significant period of time after the appointment, and I'm not sure that would be a real issue. You have a filling and you're numb for an hour or so afterwards. So I think the critical period of time is when you initially get the injection. If you're going to have a reaction, that's when it would happen, and that's when the issue of the protection of the public would be of a concern for the board.
That's what I'm saying. It's not the best time to be driving. The dentist stays, or the retired dentist, they're safe to see if there's a reaction.
Mm-hmm. Well, friends I know who are retired, the only reason I think they, not the only reason, but isn't there is because of the cost of their insurance. Their liability insurance costs are high, so they drop everything because they don't want to have to pay those kind of things. That's one of the big factors. And where the liability insurance would come in here, what they retired dentist,
The permanent cosmetic people are covered with liability.
The dentist come under that same kind of recovery system?
Senator Fisher, Senator Duncan, I'm not sure about how that would be structured, but that would be a concern because the dentist is now part of the procedure, and the dentist doesn't really much have control over what happens to the patient after the patient has the anesthetic done. There might be some concerns by the dentist as to their liability if, for example, there was an unfortunate, unforeseen accident in the course of having the tattooing done and someone wanted to obtain compensation for some potential damage. The dentist might have a significant liability.
Senator?
Yeah.
How much liability do you require dentists to carry now?
The board, Senator Fisher, Senator Shannon, the board doesn't require at this
Why
time.
Why would you require a retired dentist? Well, you don't require a practicing dentist.
No, the dentist himself who's exposed would
right.
want...
He may want to, but it's not a requirement.
No, not by the board. Okay. Exactly.
Well, it's not an issue.
Senator Shannon, the only problem that I have, I happen to come across a situation exactly what they're describing in my service in the military, where lidocaine hydrochloride, I remember, was injected, and the patient immediately had a reaction and went into cardiac arrest, and he slid out of the chair like he was on a water slide, and the dentist had had one experience with that previous to that, and this is before CPR and all that kind of stuff, but they have special oxygen, I believe, with nitrogen or something added to it that irritates the lungs and causes them to try to attempt to breathe or at least to gasp or whatever, and they administered that, and he jumped down and started pounding on the kid's chest. And I arrived just as a kid was kind of shaking his head and coming to him, wondering where he'd been for the last little bit. And believe you me, unless you see something like that personally and see what that does to an entire clinic, I mean, it literally shut things down for about a half an hour while people were discussing it and thinking about it. And it had a long-range effect. And so there is some opportunities for trouble to happen here, and I was thinking along the lines that if a dentist wished to do something like this and wished to do it in retirement, that if they got their license that and maintained their license, that perhaps for something like that their continuing education could be waived, and that would reduce the expenses and the time consumed for them to do that. And they could work out an arrangement with the tattoo parlor for the proper insurance and stuff like that. That license would allow the board to then continue to watch over it if something wasn't going right, and they could be available and work out an arrangement with the tattoo parlor on a basis like that where they would still maintain their license. And that license fee for the dentist is not that heavy, as I understand it, to really inhibit anybody from doing something like that. And I could see some arrangements there, but it might also be that they would want to have, and I don't know the procedures. I haven't been actively around it, so I don't think that much now as to what they do and whether they're required to have CPR and whether they're required to still have the oxygen stuff available in case of a problem. So those might want to be some of the considerations.
Well, we still need a little section. I just would like to work with until then.
I think that something like that could be possibly worked with, and and you could do that, and we'll go ahead and schedule this for Wednesday.
Thank you.
And I have the assurance, as I said, that we can't even, if we need to, hold a meeting Friday.
Okay.
So we've got a little running room.
Okay.
And it's been good to have the discussion today, so we don't have to have it all.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Fisher. this really isn't an exemption to practice dentistry, and so if we do something, I think it would be better to have an entirely new number established for this law rather than set it up under an exemption. Is that possible?
I don't know how an amendment would
It has the right relating clause, and we'll talk about it and see if we can work something out. If that's what we have to go, then we could. But I think that if there's a will, we can find a way to work it.
I don't have a problem with how it comes, and I'm supportive of working out some kind of arrangement. I can't imagine what somebody would be tattooing my lip without having some kind of deadening. I'm a little partial to the same thing like right in my lip or something else. Just assume that. Yeah. Got to contemplate that, but
you keep most of it.
I try. I got liability insurance. Right.
Okay, then I'll expect to have some further knowledge by Wednesday, and encourage folks to work on. We can't include it in this. There's no sense in not, you know, it's things, and this goes again to show that we don't always know at one time what's going to come up in the future, and what people are going to require, what technology is going to develop, and those kind of things. So, I think we should have a little incentive to fix this. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2108A, and I have no further business for the committee today, so I'll turn the committee on Health and Human Services.